hidden TV camera saw it all. How the children made his habits and new random kinds of patterns, and I burned him out of a nice guy. And you're full of his deception, it's your secret side of the thing, and your bones are pulled and die. This little birdie told me who was talking to a fly.
And this is Terrible Tommy, Tom Esker. This is Terrible Tommy, Tom Esker. Insurgent Radio Network calling. This is Insurgent Radio Network, and this is Terrible Tommy, Tom Esker, here in the heartland, in the bunker, right here in north central Indiana, transmitting to the world. It's me right here in the bunker, right here in the bunker. Better turn the speaker down here. Hey, it is the third of March 2014, and it's Moon's Day. We're in here for another big show. I got somebody wants to talk about Cheney and Bush and those guys on here. One of these guys from the left and the one of the dirty, rotten guys from the left. I want to hear what they've got to say a little later here, so we'll go from here, okay? Yeah, we're at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. That's where you send your donations for our daily radio show, 6 days a week, 1 hour a day. And also donations for inmates. I just picked up $525 postal money orders this morning, and we'll be addressing those and getting them out this afternoon or tomorrow. So we're doing that. Let's go up to Soviet Kanukistan. That's that country north of us that has less free speech than probably Russia at this point. And we wondered why this David Cameron Canada. The leader up in Kanukistan does a lot of the things he's doing, and why he thinks that George Bush Jr. is the greatest thing since sliced bread. Well, we got our answer to that. Let's see here. While speaking to a 500-strong group of Jewish lobbyists in London in 2007, UK Prime Minister David Cameron declared, "I am a Zionist." He went on to add, "I'm not just a good friend of Israel, but I am, as you put it, good for Jews." Wait a minute. I thought he was from Canada. I got my people mixed up. Well, anyhow, we're going to go on with this. Canadian leader is just as bad. These comments can easily be explained merely as fawning attempts to placate and appease the Jewish lobby, a necessary step for any who wish to assume high office. One has to ask the question, though, why does Anglican David Cameron conceal his own Jewish identity? David Cameron is not merely of Jewish descent. He hails from the bloodline that can fairly be described as Jewish royalty. How about that? Yet he claims never to have known this. As he spoke to the movement for Reform Judaism in 2010, he described his learning of his Jewish ancestry as the highlight of his year. While studying the Cameron family tree in 2009, Dr. Yaakov Wise, a University of Manchester historian who specializes in Jewish history, found that David Cameron is descended from a highly distinguished Jewish family line. And according to Dr. Wise, who has been using archival material to examine the Cameron family tree, the Tory leader could also be a direct descendant of the greatest ever Hebrew prophet, Moses. Wow, man, this is really getting good. I don't give a shit if he's descended from Moses, because Moses was a mythical Jew figure anyhow. He was a one of the mythical figures that came down from Mises, and before that, I forget the name he had before that, in Babylon, which is all nonsense, more Jewish nonsense. There was no man called Moses. Cameron is a descendant of banker Emile Levita, who came to Britain as a German immigrant in the 1850s. Emile Levita was himself a descendant of Elijah Levita, who lived from 1469 to 1549. During the last years of his life, Elijah Levita produced, among other works, two major books: the 1541 Translator's Book, the first dictionary of the Targums, or Aramaic commentaries on the Hebrew Bible. His lexicon of 1542 explained much of the Meshnic Hebrew language and was supplement to two important earlier dictionaries. Elijah Levita also wrote what is thought to be the first ever Yiddish novel, called Bov Buka, the Book of Bova, written in 1507 and printed in 1541. The book is based on the Italian version of an Anglo-Norman tale about a queen who betrays her husband and causes his death. Emile Levita, who was granted citizenship in 1871, is Cameron's great-great-grandfather. Oh, man, this is really hot stuff. Cameron's great-great-grandfather, Emile Levita, was a German-Jewish financier who immigrated to Britain and obtained British citizenship in 1871. Levita was the director of the Chartered Bank of India, Australia, and China, which in 1969 became Standard Chartered Bank. Levita himself is descended from Elijah Levita, a Jewish scholar and out-and-out luminary status, whose writings included not only a dictionary explaining much of the Talmudic Hebrew language, or Mishneach Hebrew, but the first ever Yiddish novel, Yiddish meaning literally Jewish, is a language of the German Ashkenazi Jews written in the Hebrew alphabet. Considering the sheer historical eminence of his ancestors, it would take real gullibility to believe that David Cameron found out about his roots 1 year before he assumed office. The question is not why did Cameron have no knowledge of his Jewish roots, but rather why would he conceal his Jewish identity? In a 2006 report on the Jewish Chronicle, cited here by Stuart Littlewood, perhaps goes some way in explaining this. The report, titled Team Cameron's Big Jewish Backers, is a laundry list of powerful members of the Jewish community who donated over £1 million to David Cameron, explaining his inexplicable rise to power after a relatively mundane and unremarkable political career. The biggest Jewish donor to the party, while Mr. Cameron has been the leader, is gaming magnate. It sounds like over here. And big Jews in the gambling business giving big money to the Republicans. His name was Lord Steinberg, who has donated £530,000 plus a loan of £250,000. Hedge fund owner Stanley Fink has donated £103,000, even though he was a declared supporter of Mr. Cameron's leadership rival, Liam Fox. A further £250,000 has been loaned by the philanthropist Dame Vivian Duffield. You see why all the big money and the Jews work together? You don't have to be a Jew. That's why I keep saying if you keep attacking, just going after the Jews, you're missing the point. It's the people who open the door for the Jews that should be your first target. During Mr. Cameron's campaign to lead his party, Jewish figures gave his team, as opposed to the party, additional donations of more than £60,000. According to the JC Inquiry's direct donations to Team Cameron in the leadership of the battle came from philanthropist Trevor Pierce, who gave around £20,000. We're talking big money here, boys and girls. BICOM chair, Poju Zebulewicz, £15,000 plus £25,000 to the party. Next chief executive, Simon Wolfson, £10,000 plus £50,000 to the party. Former Carlton TV boss Michael Green, £10,000, and Tory deputy treasurer and key Cameron fundraiser Andrew Feldman, £10,000 through his family firm J. Roma. Aside from these donations from powerful Jewish figures, a small, influential group of Jewish conservative officials and politicians were also key players in Cameron's campaign for leadership, the Jewish Chronicle report goes on to mention. In the aforementioned piece, Stuart Littlewood makes an observation about the extent to which Jews are overrepresented in the British Parliament. No crap, huh? While nobody is suggesting, I hope, that Jews have no place in our lawmaking, it is not unreasonable to wish the number to reflect their presence in the population. 3 years ago, the Jewish Chronicle published a list of Jewish MPs in Britain's Parliament, naming 24. The Jewish population in the UK at that time was, probably still is, around 280,000, or just under 0.5%. There are 650 seats in the House of Commons, so on a proportional basis, Jews could expect 3 seats. But with 24, they are 8 times overrepresented, which meant, of course, that other groups were underrepresented. The UK's Muslim population is about 2.4 million, or nearly 4%. Similarly, their quota would be 25 seats, but they only received 8. A serious shortfall. If Muslims were overrepresented to the same extent as Jews, 8 times, they'd have 200 seats. Imagine the hullabaloo if that happened. Well, this goes on and on. That was sent to me by Matt Hale, so he, he's doing like getting a lot of research done on the inside of the prison. So it just shows you that just because you're in jail don't mean you can't still operate as a soldier. I wondered why Mr. Cameron was so in the pocket of George Bush here in this country on everything. And they're all in the pocket of the Zionist Jews. That's the way the ball bounces. And it's not much of a surprise this morning to turn on the radio or the satellite receiver and the whole bit and hear the Jew right and the Jew left, the Jew Democrat, the Jew Republican, all whining about Putin. And all of a sudden, the ruble sunk to its lowest in a long, long, long time, as the Jews in the banking system and their lackeys, always remember their lackeys, are pulling all stops to screw with Putin. They may be screwing with the wrong person, though, because he's not known to back down. Now, our contacts in Russia sent me some video of these alleged neo-Nazis being rounded up in the Crimea. And they haven't been killed or anything, but they've got them under arrest. Now, these guys are working directly with this North Atlantic Treaty Organization type EU situation. So the EU and the North Atlantic Treaty Organization is not our friend in any way that can be considered friend. So whoever's convinced these young guys, and they look like almost grade school, that were captured, and they're lucky they haven't been shot, operating as neo-Nazis. Some of them, I understand, have gone from Britain down there, and some of the people in the BNP and all that kind of stuff. These people are fools, and they're led by fools. And it just shows you that this fake-created name, neo-Nazi, as being picked up by people that may think they're acting like World War II soldiers or something, but they're on the wrong side. They're on the wrong side. They're working for the Jews. So we got the neo-Nazis working for the Jews. Well, that's not new. It's happened in this country. I've seen it happen, and I know. And I've explained to you how neo-Nazis were recruited by the CIA. These are not, I'm not talking about National Socialists, people who understand what National Socialism really is, and not a part of their Hollywood Nazi schemes that the CIA and everybody else wants to use. If you know any young person that's been sucked into this and thinks he wants to go over there and throw himself into the meat grinder over there and get himself captured by the pro-Russian people, and they'll be lucky if they're not shot, and try to dissuade them from joining up or dissuading from any military service. I don't believe any ideological white separatist or Aryan or National Socialist should volunteer to fight for any of these military outfits. Especially the one here in this country that's absolutely so controlled by the Jews, and of course the people who are controlling things over there in the East are Jew. If you look on a globe, I've got one right in front of me here, and look at the Ukraine. The Ukraine's not that far from Moscow. It's both Ukraine and Moscow are in the western portions of Russia, and that's a proximity that's interesting. And it's obvious why NATO wants to get their finger down there into the Ukraine, and because Ukraine is north and west of Iran. And I'm not sure, this is not a modern globe, so I can't say for sure how far the Ukraine goes to the south, but any little piece of real estate that NATO can get involved and get closer to Iran is what they want. So it's very obvious what they're trying to do. I've got to change my sign out front to get out of NATO. Well, That's got to raise some eyebrows. Well, I've got the old boy on here, this rotten left winger, this horrible progressive, and he's spouting off about how he feels about Dick Cheney and various people and the Bush crime family. And now, Mike, I don't want you to hold back here. I want you to spit it out and really get it out there so people know what you think about him. Is that okay? All right? Okay.
Does Dick Cheney, when's this son of a bitch going to politely leave planet Earth? Cheney, who did everything he could to avoid military service during the Vietnam era, got on Sean Hannity's program, and Sean is another twisted little coward perv who also did everything he could to avoid military service. And the reason I mention that is because these two clown freaks got on there and started hand-jiving each other about how Obama is going to decimate the military because of what Chuck Hagel came out and said yesterday. So here you have two baseline cowards. Sean Hannity, who travels with armed guards every place he goes now, and Dick Cheney, who devoured somebody else's heart and avoided military service any way he could. You have these two halfwits sitting on Hannity's little toy television show on the Murdoch Terror Organization Network talking about how Obama... Well, this is what Cheney said. He said that Obama favors food stamps over a strong military. You know, back in my neighborhood, when I was a kid growing up, I took a certain number of ass kickings because I would say things that would piss off other boys in the neighborhood, and the next thing I knew, I was running home to mommy with a busted lip and blood pouring out. By the same token, I kicked enough ass back in the day too. I mean, it kind of all worked out, right? I took some ass kickings because of what I said, and I gave some ass kickings because of what I heard other people say. Cheney, I just wish Cheney, he and I are about the same age, I wish he would have been in my neighborhood. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? I think you do. Little rat bastard. During an interview on this cowardly little bastard Sean Hannity's program, Cheney went after this proposal put forth by Chuck Hagel yesterday that called for shrinking the army to its smallest size in 74 years. Closing bases, reshaping forces, because, you know, the Russian military is not going to come screaming through, is it the Fulda Valley? What is it? Maybe my two experts will tell me, what's the valley in Germany that all these people were, these troops were supposed to come streaming through? I'm sure I'll get an email from Prairie 2 and from Michael here in a second. But Cheney, who is a warmongering son of a bitch, who's a bloodthirsty man, as long as it's somebody else's blood, and Sean Hannity, who would run screaming and wetting his pants into the woods if somebody said, "Hey, Sean, how about you joining the military since you're such an advocate of war and death and destruction," right? These two sit there and say that the cuts and the reshaping that Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel, the Fulda Gap, thank you, these cuts are, Cheney's words, just, no, he didn't talk like that, these cuts are just devastating. Cheney said, "I've not been a strong supporter of Barack Obama, but this really is over the top. It does enormous long-term damage to our military. They act as though it is like highway spending and you can turn it on and off. The fact of the matter, if you will, is he is having a huge impact on the ability of future presidents to deal with future crises that are bound to arise. And I think the whole thing is not driven by any change in world circumstances. It's driven by budget considerations. Obama would much rather spend the money on food stamps than he would on a strong military or support for our troops." You know, how many ways would some comments like that, I'm trying to remember how many ways comments in that vein would have resulted in a busted lip back in my neighborhood. And the perp looking for, you know, trying to pick up his teeth with a broken arm. I swear to you. Now, I don't want to give you the impression that I lived in some tough-ass neighborhood, because I did. My neighborhood was kind of an ass-kicking neighborhood. I mean, we were poor. We were working poor. And
what's that got to do with a bike?
It just was. We played, there were vacant lots all over the place. We would play pickup games of football when we were in 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th grade. And it was tackle football. It was regular football. And I cannot tell you how many times black kids and white kids, kids from the south, kids that had come north in that big wave of southern immigrants, blacks and whites, that came north because we had work in the north. We had factories. And so it was, I mean, that's just how it was. That's just how it was, okay? But you would get a smart ass who would say things that resulted, and they were so outrageous that somebody would just walk over and pop him one right in the goddamn mouth. Just bam. No. Hey, you want to fight? No. That's not the way it was done. Now, we never picked up a stick or a piece of glass, and there were no guns. Eventually, some of the kids developed this habit of carrying switchblades. But I'm talking about somebody would smart off the way Cheney smarts off on this little prick Hannity's program. This little cowardly, not draft, well, Cheney was a draft dodger. Hannity is just a flat-out coward. And they're talking about how Obama would prefer food stamps over military. Back in my neighborhood, that would have resulted, all those years ago, in a bust right in the goddamn mouth. Pow! And then when the perp picked himself up, said, "What you hit me for, man?" Man, don't be saying stuff like that. So like what? You know what you said. You're going to play on this lot. You're going to play in our football game. You're going to play a certain way. Now, STFU, only we didn't have that back then. We didn't have, we just said it. And usually, a little punk would just stop, you know, just stop.
Devastating. It's just devastating. He'd rather have food stamps than a strong military. I believe in a strong military. Don't you, Sean?
Yes, I really do.
You know, you gotta have a strong military because we have lots of places we have to go to now and kill people.
Yes, I really do.
And, you know, it's absolutely necessary. You know, I would have gone to the military, but I have more important things.
Yes, I really do.
All right, Sean, you can stop now.
Yes, I really do. Jesus, God, these people.
Bush, you hear about this? Kathy wrote about this today on her blog. The unindicted war criminal and world-class killer, George W. Bush, is painting. His paintings will be in an art exhibit starting this April. More than 24 portraits that have never before been seen in public. The exhibit is titled "The Art of Leadership: A President's Personal Diplomacy."
What? What kind of a heroin user came up with that?
Listen to this. This is from CNN. The exhibit will feature his paintings as well as artifacts, photographs, and personal reflections about his relationships made on the world stage, according to the George W. Bush Presidential Library and Museum in Dallas, which is hosting the event. Personal reflections about his relationships made on the world stage? Would that be
bomb him! Kill him! Invade him! Hang him! Make him think they're going to drown! And don't forget to video it, because, you know, get the videos, because Cheney, he sits down there in that little dark room, and he watches porn all the time. We try to get him to watch this other kind of porn, torture porn, and you know what? He seems to like that even better. He says, I do take painting seriously. It's changed my life. Well, at Bush's presidential library opening last April, former President Bill Clinton teased his successor about paintings found in the emails that appeared to have been created in the bathroom. Clinton joked, those bathroom sketches were wonderful, but at my age, I think I should keep my suit. What? I said those bathroom sketches are wonderful, but at my age, I think I should keep my suit. What the hell does that mean? Clinton, this is early Alzheimer's, well, not so early. With Clinton? Those bathroom sketches were wonderful, but at my age, I think I should keep my suit. You get it yet? You don't? Boy, you're dumb, Malloy.
Hey, Mr. Progressive, man, I'll tell you, you let it all hang out there, man. I'll tell you what. Do you have any more? I mean, Jesus, boy, you really gave him a bunch of stuff there, man. You, Cheney, what an asshole. And every once in a while, I'm tuning across the radio and I hear this Sean Hannity. He's big time here in Indiana. He's on every day, him and Scumbaugh and the rest. And I change that radio as fast as I can change it. I can't stand to listen to the little bastard. Okay. Mike, you want to vent some more? You got more to vent on? Well, okay, get it off your chest.
Bush and Churchill, huh? Talk about, we've got two war criminals here. Dick Cheney, who wants more blood and death and destruction. You know, Cheney is an insatiable vampire. This son of a bitch will never be satisfied. I don't care how he takes it way beyond. Cheney does way beyond these Christian Armageddonist freaks who really truly believe that there has to be mass death on this planet before their Redeemer is going to return. Cheney takes it beyond that. I think Cheney is one of those who believes in population reduction, using biological, chemical, nuclear, conventional warfare. It doesn't make any difference. Cheney wants death. Cheney has always wanted death, as long as it's not his. What a sick son of a bitch. I mean, for real. So you've got Cheney, and then you got Bush, who has to be the stupidest man ever to hold the office of president. Yes, the stupidest.
You
out
said
of all
it.
44 of them, whatever the hell it's been.
You said it.
And now he's painting.
That's
he's
right.
He's doing little paintings of doggies and Jay Leno and his naked torso after a shower.
Oh,
ooh, Jesus.
God.
So, these two engineered, perpetrated, carried out the invasion of Iraq that resulted in the deaths of hundreds of thousands of people.
Yep.
And is still resulting in at least 10,000-12,000 deaths a year. The bloodshed never ends.
Nope.
So now, guess what? Iran has signed a deal to sell to Iraq arms and ammunition.
Uh-oh.
Worth $195 million. So you know, there's no big arms and ammunition there. It's not like missiles. You know, Israel doesn't have to start peeing its pants and breaking out the gas masks.
Wait a minute.
This is more like small arms, maybe RPGs, whatever. That's according to documents seen by the Reuters news agency. There's been no independent confirmation other than Reuters. But if this is true, it would break a UN embargo on weapons sales by Iran.
Ooh.
Now, wait for the screaming to start on this one. Probably by this cannibalistic son of a bitch, Dick Cheney, and the little bedwetting coward, Sean Hannity. Wait till they get together next time. Oh, did you see? Time to invade both countries, right, boys? Let's suit you two up and put you on the front lines, huh?
Yeah.
Anyway, these official documents that the Reuters news agency says they have seen showed that 6 of 8 contracts were signed with Iran's Defense Industries Organization to supply Iraq with light and medium arms, mortar launchers, ammunition for tanks, as well as artillery and mortars. One of the contracts includes equipment to protect against chemical agents. Now, the Obama administration yesterday really got on al-Maliki's case, that's our puppet, well, he's kind of not our puppet anymore, in Iraq, to explain what Reuters is reporting. A State Department spokeswoman said, "We've certainly seen these reports. If true, this would raise serious concerns."
Yeah.
She added that any transfer of arms from Iran to a third country is in direct violation of the UN embargo. Now, you see, the United States, we can transfer arms to anybody we goddamn please. But no, not Iran. No. We're supposed to be selling the weaponry to Iraq, not Iran. But the deal here is that the Iraqis could not get from the U.S. what they wanted. Because some of the warmongers in D.C. are nervous about providing military equipment to a country that they worry is becoming too close to Iran. And several Iraqi legislators said al-Maliki made the deal because he was fed up with delays regarding U.S. arms deliveries. Now, this is really going to piss off the American weapons makers, the real blood-soaked capitalists. Arms shipments, arms production. Wait. That's what we export. That and stuff that we suck up out of the ground. That's what we do now. That's our biggest cash crop, so to speak. Weaponry, death, destruction, bombs, bullets, mortars, Willy Peter. You know, stuff that hurts and maims and kills and disfigures, depleted uranium. That's our gig.
Yeah.
And Iran is trying to muscle in on the... Uh-oh.
Oh, boy.
All right. Time to send a couple of guys whose last names end in balls.
Yeah.
Over, and I don't mean Maliki, over to talk to the... what are you doing, man? Right? The Iranian government denied any knowledge of a deal to sell arms to Iraq. What are they going to say? Damn, you caught us. If it's true. One U.S. official who declined to be named said, if true, this would raise serious concerns. Any transfer of arms from Iran to a third country is in direct violation of Iran's obligations under U.N. Security Council Agreement 1747. So it just doesn't stop, does it, huh? It just keeps rocking and rolling. This is the gift that Cheney and his puppet George Bush and that whole cadre of miserable sons of bitches that ran this country for 8 years gave to us and to the world.
And military. Well, you really spit it out there, Mike. Man, you got it off your chest. Well, we're the only one. This Jewish Aryan military-industrial ruling class in this country, the only ones that are allowed to sell weapons, man. We've got the market on it. We grow some corn, but mostly we grow weapons here. Weapons plants from one end of this country to another. And the people seem to like it. Oh, I got a job. I'm making cluster bombs. That we can drop around and then little kids can pick them up and blow their hands off. Well, but I got a good job. I got to work. So why are you always criticizing the Germans, World War II, and what they allegedly did? Huh? Well, you're even worse. Oh, boy. Yeah. Okay. See you later there, Mr. Progressive. Well, you're not like most of those progressives, I'll tell you that. You tend to spit it out there pretty straight, except on the race issue, and you're terrible on the race issue. Well, here's a little bit of information you might want to know about. Quote, keep in mind that under the cover of information commotion, U.S. ships are entering the Black Sea, that is near Ukraine. They're sending Marines, and they have also begun to deploy more tanks in Europe. Unquote. So the bankrupt European Union, which has contributed so much to the financial collapse of the Ukraine, and massively depleting the financing and overthrow of the Ukrainian government, previously elected, in the words of OSCE, in an impressive display of democracy, now poses as the peaceful, prosperous alternative to the Russian. The senior Russian general has rightly warned about the geopolitical crisis which Washington and Berlin have instituted in the Ukraine. So what is the economic and political background to this serious international crisis, so reminiscent of the illegal wars in Yugoslavia, but because it goes to the heart of the Russian sphere of influence, far more dangerous? The Ukraine has suffered a big fall in economic production and financial stability as the U.S. government's withdrawal of quantitative easing has hit emerging economies like Russia, and the catastrophic euro has bankrupted the eurozone to which Ukraine exports. The EU-Ukraine trade agreement, the predictable first step, now familiar to us all, of offering economic help, today in return for complete constitutional surrender tomorrow, would have prevented the Ukrainians traveling to the West. They have the fifth highest number of IT specialists in the world. Would have given EU goods access to Ukraine, but prevented full access of agricultural goods from the Ukraine, or the Urals superb farming potential, to the EU. On the other side, Russia takes 75% of Ukraine's industrial exports, has committed $15 billion to finance the country's sovereign debt, and has sold gas at subsidized prices, only to see a Western-approved election of a Russian-friendly government overthrown. As the Eurozone has collapsed and China has retrenched, Ukraine's steel exports have halved in price, and healthy growth has fallen from an average of 4.5% in 2010 and 2011 to 0.096% in 2013. So the European Union, which has contributed so much to the financial collapse of the Ukraine and massively planning and financing the overthrow of the Ukraine government, now poses as the peaceful, prosperous alternative to the Russians. Oh boy. British Europe would have avoided economic and political extremism as usual when a British or British Commonwealth observer analysis the politics of continental Europe or historic Russia. There seems to be little alternative to the violent swing of the pendulum between authoritarian royalty or fascism on the one hand to totalitarian socialism on the other. When these choices within a nation states are subsumed by supranational powers like Soviet Russia or corporatist fascist Europe, the extremes are even more pronounced and even more difficult to solve. Well, that's enough of that, but you understand. They have everything to gain by keeping up their deal with the Russians, the Ukrainians do. I mean, it's the EU that's screwing them, and the EU banks, and the British banks, and Americans. Oh, man. Now, this is an interesting little comment I picked up on the web. In my honest opinion, while I know there are some disgusting and truly pitiful racist scum in the Garden State, that's New Jersey, it just seems like it pales in comparison to what I've seen and heard in the southern states, Mississippi, Louisiana, Texas, to name a few. Hell, they've got neo-Nazi compounds in several areas of Utah where they're preparing for the race war. Primitive attitudes, beliefs, and actions are from the coast to coast. Spreading racism. Racial propaganda. Well, I'll tell you, these people get carried away. Where are all these camps? Where are all these camps? No, I don't want to know. However, you can buy some of my weapons of mass destruction if you get down here in the spring. Yeah. But I don't know where. I don't want to know where you're taking them. Well, here's some late news. Russia is threatening that unless the Ukraine surrenders Crimea by 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time Monday, the Russian Black Sea Fleet will invade. Let me see about this here. Let's see. There's some more here. Several major news media outlets, including the ones located in the region as well as Reuters, have reported that the Russian Black Sea Fleet has informed Ukrainian forces in Crimea they must surrender by Tuesday morning, 5 o'clock a.m., 3 o'clock GMT, and 10 p.m. Monday Eastern Standard Time, I guess that is. If the Ukrainian forces do not surrender, the Russian fleet's commander, Alexander Vitko, said, according to the Interfax Ukraine, a real assault will be started against the units and divisions of the armed forces across Crimea, unquote. The Black Sea Fleet has a base in Crimea where the Russian forces are in control. Interim Ukrainian Prime Minister Arseniy Yatsenyuk responded that the Ukraine will never surrender Crimea. Quote, no one will ever give Crimea to anyone, unquote, Yatsenyuk told a press conference. Quote, there wasn't, no, and will not be any reasons for using force against peaceful citizens and bringing of military forces. The price should be paid for such actions. We realize the Russian Federation has its interest, but we address to Russia, you have no right to protect your interest by violating ours. Deputy Ukrainian Interior Minister Mykola Velikovych warned that there was a plot underfoot in which people posing as Ukrainians plan to murder several Russian soldiers in order to justify Russian military action against Ukraine. Well, I don't know. This may be true because it's coming from, you know who, the Jewish press. Remember how much the military-industrial complex loved the Cold War. They loved it. They loved it. Well, this is interesting here. There's only one problem with this faded yellowing script from yesteryear that is being imposed on the events in the Ukraine. It's colossal nonsense. Here are just some of the ways in which pesky reality renders the self-flattering Western narrative null and void. One, unlike in 1989, the man deposed by crowds of protesters in the Ukraine, Viktor Yanukovych, was not a dictator or party secretary imposed on the Ukraine by Moscow. Rather, he was elected freely and fairly in 2010 by 12,481,000 people. 48.95 of those who voted. So they have a situation where the West is cheering the ousting of a democratically elected leader while Russia is expressing concern about it. A little awkward, isn't it? Unlike 1989, the protesters in Ukraine are not all nice, democratic, Western-leaning individuals who read Der Spiegel and listen to Lou Reed. The camps in Kiev also had a healthy, or rather unhealthy, smattering of so-called far-right activists and even anti-Semites that were following Jew leaders. And now the far-right party, Svoboda, which thinks Ukraine is threatened by a Moscow Jewish mafia. Well, it actually is threatened by a New York Jewish mafia. Controls three ministries in the new interim government, so we have a situation where the Westerners are cheering as democratic and liberal a government that has anti-Semites in it. Again, awkward. They're going to argue about who's the most anti-Semitic here. Three, far from storming into the Ukraine to prop up Yanukovych, Moscow actually kept its distance while the conflict brewed there over the last 3 months. It was only with the effective fall of the Yanukovych government and its replacement by an EU-selected Washington Wall Street-approved new government that Russia sent troops to its borders with the Ukraine and also Crimea, which is kind of understandable given Russia shares a very long, porous border with the Ukraine, and the Ukraine is currently a bit of an unstable mess. Russia is less trying to expand its empire. It is seeking to fortify the borders and its interests against instability in Ukraine and pressure from Brussels and Wall Street, Washington. The truth is that it is not Russia that has behaved recklessly in Ukraine. It is the West. It was Western politicians who stirred up tensions in the Ukraine over the past 3 months by actually visiting protest camps in Kiev and telling their inhabitants that theirs was a just cause. It was also Western politicians who had high-level talks with oppositional leaders in the Ukraine, advising them on how and when to form a new interim government to replace Yanukovych. Such meddling had a far graver impact than anything Russia did at the time of 2013 or the start of 2014, since it further isolated Yanukovych, emboldened the protesters, and made violent conflict all but inevitable. It was infantile, nostalgic meddling of Western Wall Street governments in the Ukraine. Their use of Kiev as a stage on which to have a fancy dress reenactment of the Cold War years was propelled, which propelled the country towards ruin. Yet rather than ask awkward questions about the West's role in this debacle, or about the prejudices and political weirdness of the interim government, the West has helped to impose observers switch into Moscow mauling mode. Even right-wingers who are normally suspicious of the EU are lining up unquestioningly behind Brussels' claim that a glorious revolution has occurred in the Ukraine. And left-wingers who claim to hate Western orchestrated regime change and so-called racism are cheering the West elbowing aside of its elected president and its replacement by a government that includes anti-Semitic elements. It's time these observers ripped up the Cold War scripts. They should also sit down and brace themselves, because I'm afraid I have some bad news for them if you are insistent on using good guy, bad guy terminology when talking about international affairs. Then the bad guys in the Ukraine in 2014 are you. Okay. Well, anyhow, that's a little bit what's going on there. Yeah, that's something going on there. Yo. Oh, yes, I forgot to talk about or mention the Oscars, which I guess I'd really like to ignore because I knew exactly what would happen. 12 years as a slave, I knew would win. And anything that had to do with homosexuality or cross-dressing or whatever would win the Oscars. So there's no way anymore of a decent, good film that doesn't contain poor black people, poor me, or poor homosexuals being set upon is going to win. That's it. It's over. Nebraska, which I would have said was the best film out there, of course I didn't see them all, was a very good film from my point of view, as far as white people's point of view. And of course there was not one black person in the whole movie, and that's probably why it didn't win. I'll see you later. I'll be back tomorrow, Thursday, 14:05.
My lady love, she stands awaiting far across the wide Missouri on the banks. I hear her calling to me. A roll, a roll of me across the wide Missouri. A roll, a roll of me across the wide Missouri. Missouri, a rollery across the wide Missouri. I'm pushing off when dawn's a break.